right. Hello. Welcome to Every Other Wednesday. This is a podcast hosted by myself, Dylan Vickers, and my friend, Devin Navaratnam.
Hey. What's going on, guys? Well, yeah, this show is kind of going to be a little different, a little weird. We are really, really big fans of podcasts, and we're kind of really trying to figure out something creative we could do together, and this seemed like a perfect fit, so I'm pretty excited to do this with you, Dylan.
Hell yeah.
It's going to be good.
Me too, my man.
It's going to be good. Yeah, the way I'm imagining this thing going is that it's a culmination of all the podcasts that we like. You know, I'm a really big fan of comedy podcasts like My Brother and Me, and Comedy Bang Bang, stuff like that. But, you know, I'm also big fan of, like, Radiolab and all the WNYC shows and all of the PBS shows and all that. So,
yep.
NPR shows. So, the way we're going to do this is, the way I thought we should get started is to say our top five podcasts. Just so they can kind of get to know us. The audience can kind of get to know us, Dylan.
Sounds good. All right.
You go first.
Do you want to do this as, like, one and one, or list all five, and then we'll go?
Why don't you list all... No. Let's just do one and one. Maybe give a description of what the actual podcast is, if I'm not aware of it. I don't know.
Awesome.
Yeah. I don't know a lot of stuff that you listen to, and you don't know a lot of stuff I listen to, so...
This is true. So there might be some overlap here, but my number one, which is super nerdy and kind of weird, is Cortex, which is hosted on Relay FM, the podcast network owned by Mike Hurley and Stephen Hackett. Okay. And so I know... I'm pretty sure you're familiar with the educational videos on YouTube put out by CGP Grey.
Right, yeah.
So it's him and Mike Hurley discussing kind of the workflows that they use to get, like, videos done for Grey and podcasts done for Mike and Grey. And it's very Apple-centric, which fits for me because my entire tech ecosystem revolves around... the giant money sink that is Apple.
Right. Okay. Were you always like that? Like,
kind of.
Okay.
I always had an interest in Apple products, but I was using for the longest time. Like, my main computer, my first personal computer that I had was a laptop. I'm pretty sure it was an Asus,
right?
Because it was kind of at that age where it was like, hey, he's ready for his own computer so he can be trusted to not look at porn
in his
room.
Right.
And
they made a bad decision there.
They fucked up. They really fucked up. But so I really wanted a MacBook Pro because I've always had this idea of being a professional on the go. Because back in high school, if you remember, I used to carry that goddamn briefcase everywhere I went.
Yeah, for those who don't know, we are old high school friends. We are, what, how many hundreds of miles apart now?
Like 500.
500 miles apart. I am Devin here. I am stationed in Lima, Ohio. And Dylan is over there. In Dover, right?
Yep, less than beautiful Dover, Delaware. Slower, lower Delaware. Yeah.
So yeah, we're going to hear a lot of us reminiscing about old times in high school. So that's probably going to be make for boring radio. But
oh, definitely.
Yeah, for, you know, inside jokes that people don't know about and don't care about.
It's okay. Soon enough, they'll have their own inside jokes.
Right, right, yeah, right. When this podcast goes huge, you know, that's what's gonna make it.
Fuck yeah.
So you got Cortex, which I have not listened to. So it's more like a technology kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. It's like technology and, like, productivity porn is the best way I can describe it.
So they, like, and tell you basically tips and ways to make your life easier, more productive.
Yeah.
Okay.
Absolutely. And like the apps they use and the tech they use, and when they pick up new products, and whenever Apple comes out with a new keynote, they discuss it a little bit. So it's nerd delight.
Cool. Well, yeah, we're probably going to have the two overlaps here, the two obvious ones. So we'll probably just talk. We should just talk about them together. So my brother and me, and
yes.
The Adventure Zone.
Yes!
Are the two obvious familiar things that we have in common. My brother and me, obviously, and a vice show for the modern era, hosted by the three McElroy brothers. And The Adventure Zone is a spinoff of that, which is one of the brothers, Griffin. Well, that was the first show, I guess. The first arc. The first 70 episodes was Griffin being the dungeon master of a game of D&D for his brothers and his dad, Clint. So, The Adventure Zone started off as like a side hustle type thing for them, and then kind of grew into like just this huge brand on its own. So far, Griffin is the majority of what that arc has been. The majority of what the podcast has been Griffin's story. And Griffin's story was so magnetic and just great to listen to, great radio. And now they're doing like the side games where they're letting everybody else be Dungeon Master. And so right now they're in Dust, the Dust campaign, where they're playing... what's the game called?
It's one of those like
I swear we're professionals.
Google.
Oh Google.
Dust.
Yeah, I put you on the spot there.
Your zone.
Let yeah. The,
it
let
is.
Let it in or let me in or something like that. It's a variation of one of the rule sets that they played with before. But anyway, it's not that important. What is important is that the world that he made is a kind of like a True Detective type, noir type setting, but in like the Old West, but with werewolves and vampires and humans all coexisting together. It's a really interesting story. I was saying right before we were recording that I think it's my favorite one of these smaller arcs. So that's cool. And then obviously we haven't talked about my brother and me, but I mean, we don't really need to talk about it. It's one of the biggest shows. It's so good.
And it's huge and it speaks for itself. And it's like this like nerd-centric cultural phenomenon that is amazing.
Right.
And I actually wasn't introduced into either podcast, Mabim Bam or The Adventure Zone, until I think Mike Hurley mentioned it briefly on an episode of Cortex. It was either Cortex or Upgrade, which isn't in my top five, but it's another one that he does. And I think the episode was listed And We All Cry at the End.
Okay.
And that was no spoilers, but if you listen like to all 70 episodes of the initial arc, I think they call it the balance arc of the Adventure Zone.
Right.
If you do not cry at the end, you do not have a soul, and I don't want you listening to our podcast. Right. So get out. Just kidding. Please stay. We need people.
Yeah, please stay. Please clap. Please clap.
Please clap. Please clap, Jeff Bush.
Also, the other thing is that we're going to make a lot of politics jokes on here because we are huge nerds. So,
yes.
A lot of... I forgot to mention The Bugle. The Bugle is one of those crazy shows that morphs the comedy and politics, in that case, British politics, together. So I... definitely am a fan of that, but it's not on my list. What is on my list is WTF with Marc Maron. That is one of the error podcasts. I think let me check here. He has so many episodes. Let me see here. This makes for good radio. Let's see. Just stalling. I swear I'm almost there. I swear.
We're getting there.
No. Where'd it go? There you are. I swear I have.
We're so prepared.
We just recorded episode 900 2 days ago.
Nice.
With Nick Nolte.
Hey.
And it's just, if you guys know Marc Maron is, I would call it curmudgeon comedy. He's basically old man. He looks like a beatnik. Like he, mm-hmm. and he's, you know, he's heady. He, doesn't really have like one-off jokes. It's more of those story type, but he gets into, and he's a narcissist, and he gets into his narcissism and his mental instability with his guests, and gets into their shit and kind of like pokes around, and that, I mean, it's really, he kind of, his interviews are not interviews as much as they're just like therapeutic.
Yeah,
like he tries to get something out of the conversation that press interviews don't normally get out. So
yeah,
so that's why I like him.
Okay,
so I was on three, so it's your turn now, I think.
Okay, so my number three is a podcast called Due by Friday, which I honestly just found recently. It's hosted by Merlin Mann, Alex Cox, and Max Temkin.
Okay.
And
Max Temkin, the Cards Against Humanity guy.
Exactly. Yeah. And so it's hilarious. It's a weekly challenge podcast, and I think the most recent episode, they just uploaded it yesterday, and the week's challenge was stand for something. Standing is essentially creating like a fan fiction, or like delving really deep into some fandom and then creating something around it.
Right.
And it was gross and bad and just awful. At one point they, I think it was, Alex who made a pseudo erotic fan fiction about, Vision and, Ultron.
Okay.
And there's some erotic chin contact, and it's terrible and bad and great. So
I also forgot about this segment in the show notes. We're just gonna have a bunch of links when it comes to this.
Oh, absolutely.
So I mean that's good. The reason I know who Max Temkin is because of this next site, which I've stand for you all, like in the last week's conversations, is I read Giant Bomb, giantbomb.com, videogames.com, y'all know, or you don't know because it's kind of a smaller site, subsidiary of CBS Entertainment or Interactive, but they were a site that was created by Jeff Gerstmann. He's been writing about video games most of his life, and the Giant Bombcast is their flagship podcast, and it is usually 2.5 to 3 hours of just news and what have you guys been doing, and they have a panel of people usually to talk about, you know, what have you been playing, what are the pros and cons of that, what's the news, what are the emails we got in, all the stupid stuff that we've gotten from fans and stuff like that, you know, talk to the community, because a giant bomb started as a forum and kind of grew out from there. So, and they're celebrating their 10th year anniversary, this year. So,
oh, hell yeah. Congratulations.
So yeah, it's huge. And, E3 started, like I'm seeing E3 stuff now. CES is going to start up. Like, man, this year is going by fast, and
it's fucking crazy. And I think I told you briefly, I'm actually going to be making my first trip to the West Coast, which some people say is the best coast. I can't judge because I haven't been there yet. But so every year Apple does their worldwide developer conference, WWDC.
Right.
And for the past 3 or 4 years, there's been a like coinciding conference that's completely free to go to called AltConf. Mm-hmm. And I picked up tickets to go in a spur the moment move because I want to add more adventure to my life. And so I will be going in June to San Jose, California to AltConf, and I'll be going, I believe, on the 6th of June to Relay FM is doing a live show, and I will get to meet Mr. Mike Hurley in person. Cool. My podcast hero. And I'm very excited.
So we're not even famous yet, but you're plugging your tour dates, basically.
I mean, you know, someday down the road, celebrating our 10-year every other Wednesday anniversary.
Right.
It'll be great. I mean, and just real quick, I want to throw out. So the reason we're calling this every other Wednesday, and this is like a mandatory first episode shout out, is as Devin O'Ray said, we're old friends from high school, and we had a common math teacher in high school, Mr. Todd Hardesty.
H-Dog.
Who's a fucking legend.
He is a legend. Yeah.
And so...
Shout out to Dublin Scioto High School.
Hey, what up?
Yeah, it's fucking good school.
Hell yeah. Yeah. Great teachers, great times, great clubs.
Yeah, but go on, Dylan.
But yeah, so he would do... Every Friday, he would tell a story called a Shelby story. After Christmas break... Or after the return from Christmas break or holiday break, if you're an atheist like me, God, we just lost the Christian listeners. I feel real bad.
Yeah, we can't. I mean, we do have a first show. Okay. We're going to halt this a little bit. Our first show has on the agenda the gun debate.
Fuck.
And we're also talking about the... what can sound overly complicated Cambridge Analytica story. So It could turn off a lot of potential listeners. But we're a podcast for the everyman. Okay?
Exactly.
Okay. Just keep listening. Maybe you'll learn something, maybe you'll have a laugh. You know.
God. Yeah.
That's not condescending. Fuck. Maybe you'll learn something.
Maybe you'll learn something. God, we're losing the conservative audience, too.
So yeah, after holiday break.
Yes, after holiday break, we came back, and Mr. Hardesty introduced this new thing to supplement the Shelby stories called Every Other Wednesday. So every other Wednesday, there would be a random, Disney golden books that were rejected. And they'd be things like... I stopped crying when Dad stopped coming home.
Right.
And, just random, children book stories that got, not approved and tossed out the window and just other random lists. The greatest poem written ever about loving someone like a tumor.
Oh, my God. What was that poem called? I bought a copy of it. We need to... contact Mr. Hardesty right away and get a copy of that and read it on air.
We do.
It's amazing. It's amazing. Nobody else knows what we're talking about except maybe one person that went to Scioto that's listening to this. Maybe.
Hi.
Just for whatever reason. I always thought Mr. Hardesty seemed like that person that moonlighted as a comedian when he was younger. And then just never, he's always been funny. And so He's putting that through to his work. And I enjoyed his class more knowing that I was going to hear a story and he is a great storyteller too.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. And I thought for a second there in high school that, hey, when I grow up and become a famous writer, I'm going to come back to, Mr. Hardesty and get him to, tell me all these stories and I'll write them all down and we'll make a book.
Hell yeah.
I mean, that still could happen. We could just...
It could.
Make some audio logs and come every Friday to Scioto and just, have him stay after class and tell us these stories.
Hell yeah. We could try and get him to be a guest on the show, but I don't know if he'd go for that.
Yeah. It's kind of it's already profane, so he's probably he's into that family-friendly humor.
He is. He also has his reputation to maintain, and it will be forever tarnished if he were to associate with us on this podcast. Yeah. So,
but so shout out to him.
That was
very smart man.
Shout out to Mr. H.
Very cool,
the
cool
best.
Was it yours? Was it mine?
That was mine. Yeah, I just got done with Dubai Friday.
Okay, so I have the one last one, which was the wild card. I put it up against a lot of other podcasts, but I'm going to say Doughboys. Doughboys is a show hosted by Nick Weiger and Mike Mitchell. Mike Mitchell being from Love fame. He's also on the Birthday Boys. Nick Weiger has written for a Comedy Bang Bang and for some other things. And they're just two comedian friends that review chain restaurants. And so they started this about almost 3 years ago now. And they've been reviewing chain restaurants with guests and, you know, giving each chain restaurant a fork rating. It's a very stupid and great podcast. They talk about, like, you know, how did the cheese look, and, like, you know, like, was the texture, was the service nice, like, they get into it.
I'm picturing, like, anytime, like, you're hungry as fuck, like if you're on a road trip or something, and you plug into Google Maps, like McDonald's or something, and you see those people who've given McDonald's like a Yelp review. It's like, the service fucking sucked. Right. And I'm like, what do you expect? Right. It's a goddamn McDonald's.
And they're hilarious. There's some podcasts on the Doughboys are like the most, like they're Bobby Lee. Bobby Lee's always a great podcast guest. Bobby Lee from Mad TV. He was on Doughboys, and like the way he, maybe this is just a shout out to Bobby Lee, but the way he tells stories is that he goes from heartbreaking to just gut busting entertaining. Like it's like he has a story about on Mad TV where they had like this thing where like they pooped in each other's offices. Like there's like a, and then there's another story about him like being molested as a child. So like,
oh shit.
He goes back between that. But for the Doughboys itself, there's a Yazir Lester episode from, I think it's a ramen place. But like, they have a lot of funny people on, and they do a lot of funny stuff, and they have a lot of live episodes. It was funny that you say that with the what was I just gonna say? God damn it!
Oh, I hate it when that happens.
Don't you? Yeah. So, on a road trip. You're gonna say on a road trip? They had a live episode in Austin recently, and this fan said, yeah, we listened to your podcast on the way up, and whenever we would stop at a fast food restaurant, we would listen to your podcast and then rate the fast food. So, it's great. I mean, there's a lot of chains that I've never been to that I'm curious about, so so I like listening to it. Yeah, Doughboys.
Oh, yeah.
It's good.
Good shit. So my last one is another Relay FM feature. It's called Upgrade.
Okay.
It's with, once again, Mike Hurley and Mr. Jason Snell. He used to be a writer for Macworld, I think, back in the day. Until he started his own website, Six Colors.
Okay.
And it's all about like the latest Apple releases and reviews of products, and there's Snell Talk where Jason just does a little bit about some whatever's going on in his life, which is usually delightful or terrible, like having a spider stuck behind the screen of his iMac, which he has no idea it got in there, but it did, and Apple was like, we can't replace this. Sorry. So, but yeah, it's if you're noticing the pattern with me, a lot of Apple-centric right. stuff, because I am a shill. So
I've seen that before. I was at the gas station recently, and there's just, like, a fly behind, like, the display. And, like, perfectly encapsulated in the display. Great. I took a picture of it, but, yeah. I have no idea how bugs get inside displays. It's,
Yeah.
Maybe they pupate and, like, crawl in there, and then... I don't know.
They become the screen.
So, was that a segment? That was a segment?
I think that was a segment. I think
that
we did it.
That was a segment, which I am alluding to another thing, Polygon, Gil and Gilbert. They host a show I was watching just recently, but the theme of the show was Sorry for Dying. And if you guys don't know, Polygon is a video game website, so they're not actually dying. Nobody's killing anybody, but they had to come up with a ballad after they died in The Legend of Zelda: Breath of the Wild, and they're both musicians, so it was pretty good.
Oh hell yeah!
But yeah, whenever they complete a level, they'll touch their soundboard and it'll go "Gilling in the name of," and whenever they complete a segment. They'll touch their soundboard and they'll go segment complete. So
completing.
So yeah, a shout out to Gil and Gilbert. They don't need our shilling, but
we'll still do it anyway.
Right. None of these famous things need our shilling, but we're gonna do it anyway.
Just because we love it so much.
Right. What topic do you want to go on first?
Before I get into a topic, I really want to just... So, this morning, we agreed to start recording at 9 o'clock, and I was going to stick to my normal routine and, like, get up at 6 o'clock in the morning because I'm a crazy person, and that's a normal hour for me to be awake and start doing stuff because I like to spend my morning hours doing something productive for something I like and not for my actual job that I get paid for, which is how I prioritize things.
You're a better person than I am.
And so I didn't do that this morning. I knew that we were getting on Skype around 9 o'clock, and I kept smashing that motherfucking snooze
button. Smash that like button.
And it was 8:30, and I was like, shit, I need coffee. So I rolled out to my car, didn't even shower, threw on a hat, and get into my car, look down at my cup holder, and see this melted thing of McDonald's self-serve. Ugh. And I remembered the night before when I just wanted some dinner, and what do I get for dinner? I get 2 sausage, egg, and cheese McGriddles at my nearest Golden Arches, and get back to my room. And I'd had this whole long conversation with the cashier, because he said, hey man, you know these sausage, egg, and cheese, they aren't on the 2 for $4. You sure you don't want bacon, egg, and cheese? I'm like, dude, if I wanted bacon, egg, and cheese, I would have asked for
it. Well, that's a good guy.
Thank you.
He's looking out for you.
He's trying to get you a deal. He's trying to save me those $2. That $2.38. And I'm like,
you could spend
I appreciate it, man.
More sandwiches.
Damn straight. I just wanted my sausage.
Right.
And so I get all the way back to my apartment and open the bag and look at the receipt. $6.28. Cool. Open it. It's bacon. Okay. I paid $2.38 more for this bacon, and I got upset, and then I thought, you know, everyone makes mistakes. Right. So I drove back and I politely say, hey guys, I think you made a mistake. I ordered, here's my receipt, the $6.38, and here's my bacon. Mm-hmm. And normally I love bacon, because I'm a little fat boy, but I didn't want bacon this time. And the cashier was super, super kind and offered me a free plain sundae.
Nice.
Of McDonald's soft serve. And I didn't want to say no thank you. So I left with my proper sandwiches and this just kind of ice cream that I didn't want. And so I set it in my cup holder and completely forgot about it until this morning, right, when I found it looking depressed. And I don't know if you've ever seen completely melted McDonald's.
It's like in your cup holder, though? Like it's like in your interior of your car?
Oh, no, no, okay. No. It's in the cup.
Okay, that's good. That's fine.
But it just looks sad. It looks like...
It would have looked sadder if it was just like a waffle cone in like just this melty vanilla syrup puddle. In your car.
But it's not even syrup, though, the weirdest thing. It's like...
Water?
Very, very light foam. It's like foamed hand soap. And I looked at it, and it just looks so depressed, and I'm like...
That gives me pause for eating
this
that.
This is me. I am this McDonald's melted soft serve. I am this.
That's very, very heady. You should write a poem about it.
I should.
Okay, so for those who don't... There are more things that are just going to keep on, you know, sidetracking, flagging, whatever. Those who don't know, we both also write poems. We should have probably went out in the beginning and said what we do, besides our day jobs. But... Whatever, we're here, we're good, let's do it. I write music reviews and poetry and sometimes short stories. And then Dylan writes poems and sometimes short stories, sometimes?
Sometimes short stories, sometimes articles. Sometimes. And I also go out and actually do spoken word poetry.
Unlike me.
So.
No.
Goddamn introvert.
Right. I just, you know. Lima, Ohio is not a big poetry town, if you could guess here. Yeah. They want bands, and they don't want bands to do, like, original music either. They want, like, cover bands. And they don't really want public speaking events. There is UNOH is, like, right down the block. So I could I could probably find a place to do that sort of thing. But I would be among, like, 20-year-olds, 19-year-olds.
Yeah.
I don't know if I want to take that leap, if I want to take that jump there. Hey, kids, I want to share my poetry with you. I mean...
It's like, who's this old man?
Where else am I going to do it? But also, when you were saying that that they give you bacon instead, I want to shout out Bacon House, because Bacon House Twitter is always fire. Bacon House, you know who you are. They were my unofficial fraternity at Ohio State. You probably don't know this.
Nope.
But yeah, so earlier my cousin introduced me to these guys, and we became really, really good friends. And then like a year into us meeting and being like a friend group, I said, you know, if we had a fraternity, we would call it Bacon House. And so we stuck with that title. And so like 5 years later, the Bacon House Twitter is still going strong. We used to have a site. Like, it's good. Yeah.
Hell yeah.
So, you know, Adam and Colin and other Adam and Timmy and Tim and Jeff and Ben. You all know who you are. Bacon House Twitter. That's what's up.
Hell yeah.
So, now topic?
Yeah. So, I think you prepared some stuff about guns and why they're sometimes bad.
Guns are sometimes bad. As we all know, the Parkland shooting happened March. Happened last month. I have March written down for some other reason. Happened around a month ago, killing at least 17 people. 17 people, killing 17 people. And it kind of brought up a new direction in the gun debate, because the people that were victims came out immediately in support of gun restriction.
Mm-hmm.
Almost because the, you know, the defense when something like this happens is, no, we shouldn't politicize a national tragedy. You know, we should let these kids grieve. And
yeah, which has become such, and this is my opinion, just my opinion, not an actual like factual thing, but that is such fucking bullshit. Mm-hmm. That has been used over and over and over again as like, let's not actually get anything done. and I'm not sponsoring either side, but let's not politicize the kids has been used way too fucking much for way too long to avoid actually dealing with the issue.
And I want to be clear here. We've talked about this many times before we started recording, that we don't want to be a politics show that's like, I'm all left-leaning and I say things that, you know, they would like. No, we just want to bring up facts that we thought were interesting, maybe make you think a little bit about, you know, where these ideas come from, and maybe give you some good stories to think about you know, on your drive or whatever you're doing while you're listening to this podcast.
Absolutely. And because we're both like super nerdy and very political, obviously our views are going to get kind of like, they're going to slip through the cracks here.
Right.
And under no circumstance are we trying to influence you or like make you think like us.
Right.
This is just the overarching stories and sometimes like how we feel about it. So
where do we want to start on the gun show? Or, well, I guess one's called the gun show and one's just the 538 podcast. Both of the topics I got for today are from two really, really, really good podcasts. One's from More Perfect's gun show. More Perfect is a podcast presented by Radiolab. And then one's from the 538 politics podcast called the Gun Debate. Which they had immediately after, I think it was after the walkout, was what they when they initially aired that. I think the gun show is probably more apt to start with because it kind of talks about the beginnings of the Second Amendment issue. So,
absolutely, which I actually found to be the more most interesting part of this. And like a true professional, I only listened to one of the two podcasts that we are going to be discussing.
It's fine. I'm just going to intersperse some of the arguments and things that 538 was making into our conversation. So, you know, it's I don't really need to a long spiel about the 538 podcast.
Yeah. But I think the More Perfect is a good place to start. I actually really the fact that this all just kind of stemmed from the Black Panther Party movement and how they were kind of like that was the original like proponents of Second Amendment rights because they wanted to police the police in a way and perhaps you can expound a little bit more on that and how Ronald Reagan was also kind of involved in this weird situation.
So the entire podcast, the entire segment is framed in how do we interpret the Second Amendment, and the Second Amendment wasn't interpreted like the way it is has been recently until, you know, fairly recently, 2008, but the Black Panther movement was kind of the first stemmings of how we started interpreting the Second Amendment in a more individual rights way. So yeah, they kind of frame their episode in three parts. And the first part is Black Panthers movement, October 1966. The Black Panthers are made with Bobby Seale and Huey P. Newton to basically police the police department. Police observe the police department, and and you know they interview Bobby Seale for the podcast, and he's, you know, he's as passionate as ever. He's talking about you know, and he's talking about, you know, they got up in Huey's face and they said, you know, why are you carrying the shotgun around, and you know, he's like, are you a communist, and he said, are you a fascist, and he said, are you a communist, and he said, are you a fascist? I asked you first, I asked you second. It's a really good story. But then they go to, so as you pointed out the last time that we were on Skype together, a lot of fun things happen when you say white people got scared.
Yes, every major turning point in American history essentially has been for the worst because white people got scared.
So, you know, in the bylaws in California at the time said that citizens could have open arms if they announced that they did have a gun on them, then the gun was fully visible. They also could observe the police if they wanted to, if they were standing at a reasonable distance.
Which was, like, exactly measured out at some...
Like 20 feet.
I think, like, 20 feet? Right. Yeah, 20 feet.
Right, so when they were accosted by the police, they would spiel out this bylaws thing, and, you know, the police can't do anything about that, because, you know, they have them. I mean, they could have beat their ass, but... And I'm sure they did in a lot of parts.
And they still do.
And they still do. But that's another
episode.
So 1966, the Black Panther Party is formed for the observing of the police department. 1967, there is rumblings going on about this Mulford Act. And the Mulford Act would basically ban a citizen from brandishing a gun in public. There's a famous quote by then Governor Ronald Reagan, where he says that no individual persons.
Yeah, there is no reason. A citizen at this time should be on the streets carrying a loaded weapon,
right.
Which I just find absolutely mind-blowing because of how often Reagan is quoted today as this pro-Second Amendment advocate and just kind of like a pioneer of the conservative movement's gun rights advocacy.
And we don't really get that until the NRA, which is in... kind of a weird way all tied back to this Black Panthers thing, because if the Black Panther movement didn't happen, then this conversation around guns wouldn't be as fraught as it was at that moment. I'm getting a little ahead of myself. So the Black Panthers go to petition the Mulford Act, and they, you know, there's a whole story on I don't want to say the whole story, so
we'll have links to the podcast that we're discussing, so you can listen in depth in the show notes. But
they do see Ronald Reagan there, who is showing around these young professionals around the Capitol building.
They were like school kids, weren't they?
No, they were. I think they were in college. They were like they were like 18, 19 year olds, and they thought that the Black Panthers were a gun club.
Yeah, and they all rushed over. It's like, oh wow, cool!
What's going on? It's amazing. But yeah, that so we can't. But nevertheless, the Mulford Act passed. It passed. Black Panthers were arrested for disturbing the peace of the congressional or the hearings. So, Mulford Act passed, and meanwhile, in the late 60s, early 70s, people are, the NRA is just this organization out here not for gun rights, but for gun usage.
It was like a sports club, essentially.
A sports club, right. So, it's not... They would have magazines, and they would show these are the type of new rifles that you can buy and whatnot. But the politicization, the commercialization of their brand really wasn't at that point. It was more about the message of, hey, we want to make sure that young men know how to fire a rifle in, you know, in times of need, hunting.
Yeah. Or it was very Boy Scout-y.
Yeah. Yeah. Which, I mean, I can get behind. Like, I do think that's a skill, and I do think that, you know, if you want to, you should be able to, you know, have fun.
Yeah.
But this NRA, in the late 70s, 1977, there was kind of outrage going on in the NRA because they're hearing mm-hmm. about these acts like the Mulford Act, like the act in D.C., which we're going to hear about later. Mm-hmm. And these are acts that are banning people's personal use of firearms. And, you know, there is a small but loud minority in the NRA saying, hey, we can't allow this to happen. Meanwhile, the larger majority of the NRA is saying, well, we're just a sports club. Let's just stick to, you know, the plan. They're going to move, their headquarters. They mentioned, to, the Olympic, to observe the Olympic tryouts and all that. Like they were more into the sports shooting kind of thing. They mentioned like at one point that there was rumors that they're going to take rifle out of the name of NRA because it was associated with, you know, the Black Panthers or violence happening in the streets. So out of that outrage, there was a couple of people. They call themselves the Federation for NRA, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
Federation for NRA. And they kind of mobilized a force and got in May 22nd of 1977. They were in, was it Toledo or Dayton?
I think it was Toledo, and they were having this general assembly.
Right. And they're having a general assembly meeting, and, you know, everything's fine. You know, they thought it would go as smoothly as every other general assembly meeting. The NRA is a very old organization too, 200 something mm-hmm. years old now. So,
yeah.
You know, very old, very storied. So, you know, they just thought that it would be any traditional meet and greet, whatever. And
yeah.
They open the floor for questions, and the guys from the Federation start rushing the stage. And they mm-hmm. start making these demands about where the whole association should go.
Yeah, this whole situation, it's and so you guys can crazy. Hear about it more. It's buck wild.
It is
and
the craziest thing. And it changed the future of everything. You can't imagine modern politics without talking about the gun debate. And mm-hmm. to think one night in May in Ohio, these guys just kind of made it happen.
Yeah, they completely reformed the idea of what the NRA was supposed to be. And it was because this very, very vocal minority in the actual association didn't want to make the move to observe the Olympics. They didn't want to be a, like, sport-themed right. magazine. They wanted to focus more on their individual agendas. Right. And then they just had a few of their representatives rush, like, the four crowd mics they had in the audience so that people could ask questions or bring up parliamentary right. procedure and just completely wrecked shit right. at this meeting.
They had recordings of some higher-ups saying that, you know, they wanted to get rid of, like, the individual rights stuff in their mm-hmm. in their bylaw, in their, you know, bylaws. And, you know, once the recordings came out, people were like, oh, shit. No, they're yeah. serious about this. Like, they don't want us to talk about individual rights of the firearm owners. So mm-hmm. they kind of swayed the room. And by mm-hmm. the next day, there was a whole new leadership in NRA. And yep. that small wing kind of just staged a coup and basically took over. It's
Buck Wild. Buck Wild.
So since after 1977, you start seeing NRA become more political because that's kind mm-hmm. of their goal, and they find their first presidential candidate in a young Ronald.
Guess
Ronald,
who was
Ronald
it?
Ronald Reagan.
Oh, the same guy Ronald from before Reagan. Who was like no guns. You know, no,
and,
why?
And then they have another. They have another. Quote from Ronald Reagan is like, you know, this legislation that I will help pass will ensure individual firearm rights for citizens or something like that.
So Americans have always had shitty short-term memory, and it's not right. just the past few years.
Right. So within 10 years, he changed his tune on guns. So.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure NRA kind of had something to do with that, but yeah. So NRA had been like kind of like a sleepy thing, like, you know, it was talked about in politics, but it wasn't really a huge issue. People mm-hmm. really, even, you know, scholars weren't still talking about the Second Amendment like it was a big deal. You know, it's mm-hmm. it until.
It was the least, it was honestly, like, the least, like, discussed amendment to the Constitution in most litigation, wasn't
right.
it?
Right. And I think we should maybe lend a little time to the discussion of the interpretation, because mm-hmm. it, for most of America's history, the interpretation of the Second Amendment is, hey, these well-regulated militias can have guns in order to overthrow the government. If the government mm-hmm. becomes too much of a hassle, right?
Yeah.
And that was the emphasis of that amendment. Well, mm-hmm. there's also part of the amendment, that clause saying that you cannot infringe on a person's right, right? So. Mm-hmm. And yeah. they're trying to figure out why they said peoples and why they said militia in the yeah. Second Amendment. Because if peoples and the militia were treated the same, why wouldn't they just say peoples?
Exactly.
Right.
And I think the comma was just discovered. I think that was right. a joke that was made right. on the podcast right. because the full text.
You
yeah,
want to read it?
The full text is a well-regulated militia, comma, being necessary to the security of a free state, comma, the right of the people to keep and bear arms, comma, for some reason, shall not be infringed.
Right. Right. And so you have, and you have all these, you know, what I would say, you know, in my cadence, I would say liberal yuppies, mm-hmm. I count myself, and I'm painting myself into a corner here, but liberal yuppies say, freak out about the Second Amendment because they're like, well, this is very hard to understand, you know, there's a mm-hmm. lot of parts to it. And then they also have these conservative guys that they're also interviewing, and they go, no, it's very simple, you know, there's just two parts to it. And one's the militia part, and one's the individual mm-hmm. part. And so it's very strange as to, you know, did the framers intended, which is what yeah. brings us to our next story. So 2008, Bush is still president, and, you know, obviously was an NRA candidate, mm-hmm. got in office being pro-gun, very pro-gun, and, you know, kind of, they even said that he came out with a memo saying that, you know, we're going, this administration is for our rights as, you know, firearm owners. I think Attorney General came out with one. Mm-hmm. So very, very pro-gun. So it was, you know, the environment was pretty fertile for some for a new decision on how to interpret the Second Amendment. So what these and these lawyers, they're not mainline conservative guys. They're not NRA guys. I mean, I'm sure they were bankrolled by the NRA, but but you know, they are these libertarian guys that are trying to, at least what they say, trying to open up the rights of people. Which, I mean, we in high school we were gonna go down this road, so let's go down this road. In high school, we used to call libertarians, what would we call them, Dylan?
Unicorns.
And we had he's a very nice guy. We had a very nice friend who we would call unicorn and tease him. But I as an aside here, I do get the libertarian message, and I do think that is part of all of our ways of looking into politics is, you know, we want to conserve the freedoms of everybody. We just go about different ways of doing it on different sides. So I totally buy into libertarian message, but not necessarily the ideology. So anyway, 2008 decision, they needed to find because you can't go to court without standing. They needed to find somebody who had had a previous standing or previous case in which they could not use their firearm and it was of importance to them, but they couldn't use it legally. Something that, you know, distress, I think, is the legal term. A case.
Okay.
So they find this guy, this pretty old guy, Heller, in D.C. Joseph Heller, I think was his name. They find him in D.C. and it's still D.C. still has that law from the 70s. About gun owners at this point, where you can't have a gun. You can have a gun, but if you have a gun, it cannot be loaded. You cannot own ammunition for that gun. You cannot, you know, have a loaded gun on you. So very very strict gun ban there. So. Once that decision went in, Heller already had a gun, and he had a handgun, and he wanted. He was really into the gun. He was really into. He says that his hero was Dylan. What's his name on Gunsmoke?
That guy.
Yeah. But he had a real cowboy-esque kind of gun. And yeah, I mean, that's pretty cool. I would want a cowboy gun too if I was gonna get a gun. But anyway, so he had a cowboy gun, the six shooter kind of thing. That he was, and he goes through his options of, you know, he could have gave over to the police, which wasn't gonna happen. He could throw it away, which wasn't gonna happen. Or he went with his option of giving it to his brother and having his brother hold it because his brother lived in Maryland. So it was just a drive. So he would visit his gun ever so often. It's a very funny story. It's a, you know, gun visitation.
Weekends and holidays.
I mean, you gotta feel for the guy a little bit. You know, you can't. But
I mean, the courts always side on the mother's side. Right. So I mean,
right. And so, what happened was Heller goes to these guys, and Heller had already applied for licenses for his gun. And what's funny is that the standing for his entire case rests on his license being denied. In the District of Columbia, because he knew that he wouldn't be able to, but he was still going to do it, so he got a standing, mm-hmm. got something to present the court. So they have that. They have his denied license, and mm-hmm. they make it a Supreme Court case because, you know, we don't have a solid interpretation of the Second Amendment. Second Amendment mm-hmm. case has never been brought to trial. Mm-hmm. And so they bring it up to the Supreme Court. And it's a buck wild, I think, a buck wild proceedings in the Supreme Court. If mm-hmm. if Supreme Court proceedings can be buck wild,
as buck wild as they get,
a little rowdy. Justice Edwards talking about shooting bears. Justice Antonin Scalia, Boy Scout for the NRA, just like mm-hmm. telling the lawyers what to say. Like, oh my god, it's a really good. Again, if you want to go back there, the podcast is more perfect. We're gonna have it linked down in the show notes. But obviously, that decision in Antonin Scalia is in the affirmative for that decision, that the interpretation of the Second Amendment states that all individuals have the right to bear arms, and mm-hmm. that states do not have the right to impede on that right. But there's also restrictions to that within reason, you know. Mm-hmm. If the state regards you as mentally inept, or, you know, there are certain places where they can stop you from having a firearm. But mm-hmm. for the most part, an individual has the right to purchase and bear his arm. Mm-hmm. And so from that 2008, so this is just 10 mm-hmm. years in the future, 2008 decision, we go from there to now. And yeah. the NRA has basically hijacked political discourse in this country as to where, I guess I'm getting more left-leaning talk radio here. Sorry.
It's all good. We both have our moments.
Sorry. But the gun debate is so huge in this country, where just mm-hmm. 40 years ago, it wouldn't have been.
It was non-existent. And this didn't happen. This, like, intensity right. didn't pick up until a decade ago.
Right. And after the 2008 decision, it just opened the floodgates for mm-hmm. every state pass, you know, to, you know, all of their laws banning mm-hmm. guns, all their strict ones yeah. were gone, mm-hmm. and just open up the floodgates for more and more activists to come in and bigger and bigger guns.
And the argument has been for such, it feels like for such a long time, that a lot of these very conservative or like alt-right people have been making, is that they've been doing this forever. The government has been coming after your guns forever. And that's just simply not the case.
Not true. Right. It's just factually inaccurate.
Yeah.
So I do have the little bit here from the 538 podcast. I just got some of their talking points and some of their statistics there. Also linked in the show notes. So, in a CNN poll taken at that time, I guess 538 was happening around the walkout, which was last week, March 14th. That'll date the episode a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah.
But the poll, and polls are usually conducted within a time period of the event occurring. There's mm-hmm. not usually a gun poll just out there, which there probably should be. Mm-hmm. They should probably just should
yeah.
continuously, because it's such a hot issue, they should probably just continuously pull people on guns. So there's not really a heartbeat on how the American people feel about guns at any one time, just because there are so many prevalent mass shootings happening all the time.
Yeah.
So this CNN poll went from the stricter from approval of stricter gun control law from 52% the last time that they polled to 70% now. Mm-hmm. And that's just among total pollster. Jeez. So 70%, and that might not mean, because the vagueness of the question, it might be, you know, we just want, you know, universal, you know, kind of a federal stepping yeah. into what can and cannot be done in the sale of guns, you know. Mm-hmm. You know,
because there are so many different loopholes and right. so many different situations in every different state. Right. I mean, the decision in 2008 basically ensured that no individual state could deny someone the right to purchase a right. gun unless in situations regarding, like, the question of if their mental health is questionable or if they're a felon, something right. so on and so forth. But those were the only two standards.
Right.
So besides that, states can do whatever the hell they want. And I think a lot of what people are calling for right now is just more federal oversight to be like, this is the standard. You have to follow this.
And I would be remiss to say that I mean, I don't know a lot about guns. I was not raised up in gun culture. My parents never owned weapons. My family never owned weapons. So, you know, the first time I saw a gun, I was in college. Like, I have left-leaning parents, and
yeah.
they, you know, instilled in me that, you know, guns can do more harm than good. So, mm-hmm. you know, don't, and they also told me, you know, don't go into the military, and don't mm-hmm. be a policeman, because I don't want you to get mm-hmm. a shot. I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
Fine. Whatever. I mean, you know, most of police business is just writing down stuff anyway, but yeah. that's a different topic.
Mm-hmm.
But what I was trying to say is that I don't know a lot about guns. Mm-hmm. And I know that by how much I've talked to my friends that know a lot about guns and own guns and shoot on the weekends. And, mm-hmm. you know, there are some pitfalls that, you know, the left-leaning media gets into, or left-leaning talking heads get into when they're talking about guns, saying, you know, these in general, these things are the things that are bad, which
yeah.
really we mean, like, a certain subsection of things that are very deadly are the bad things. And, you know, mm-hmm. this hunting rifle isn't going to be that big of an issue if we let somebody go out hunting. So
yeah,
I just wanted to jump in there and give a kind of like a little subtle nod to, you know, I have, you know, you probably have big gun nut friends too that, you know.
Oh, absolutely. And I am actually personally a fan of recreational shooting.
Right.
I
was going to ask you about that actually, because
yeah.
if you guys don't know, Dylan is in service, so.
Yeah, I'm in the Air Force. In my military service, I have fired a rifle exactly once.
Okay.
That was qualification at basic training back in 2014. I haven't touched a active rifle since.
Okay.
The only other time I touched a rifle was when I was in honor guard and that thing shot blanks.
Right.
So, it was more for the ceremonious nature of things.
Right.
But, I am a fan of recreational shooting. I am personally a proponent for stricter gun control. However, the pitfall I'm really concerned about is the understanding of assault weapons.
Right.
Now this...
That's what was on my mind when I was talking about that.
There's a lot of confusion about what qualifies something as an assault weapon.
Right.
And a lot of my issue with the the liberal talking heads is that they view something that is that looks like something a soldier would carry as an assault weapon, that is because it looks frightening, right, and it looks military.
Because it's in matte black, it has to be terrifying.
Exactly. And the truth of the matter is the M14, the AR-15, sorry, the AR-15, which is the civilian model. It's a semi-automatic rifle, which means for each shot fired, you have to pull the trigger individually. So if you hold it down, it's not going to spray bullets. You have to pull the trigger for each round you're expending. But because it looks like what we're so used to is seeing in the movies of the military and criminals and that sort of thing, they think it's an automatic weapon. Right. And it's not.
Right.
And the only thing that can sort of make it act and behave like an automatic weapon is currently illegal. Now, the part of gun control that I think needs to step in here is regarding that piece of equipment calling, which is called the bump stock. Illegal to put on your AR-15, yes. Illegal to purchase the parts? No.
Yep. So and I've heard of some illicit activities happening where people are making things they shouldn't make.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
So that to me is where the oversight needs to come in. It needs to come in towards standardization and formalization and systemization of these control measures, so it's actually something that's effective and not just something that looks good on paper that people can go to whichever party vote or whichever voting bloc elects them into office and say, I did this for you, aren't you happy?
I had just a few more points here. For Democrats, gun control has become an identifying issue. I think that's it's really weird to see that like actually thrown back at me, because yes, I think you know, if I were to interview my family on guns, I think everybody would say we want gun control. No one should have a weapon. Mm-hmm. Right, and that's my family. I kind of see the subtleties of, you know, and you know, I'm in Lima, everybody here has a gun. Mm-hmm. So
yeah.
Like, I see where people are coming from, but yeah, where I grew up, gun control was definitely an identifying issue. So yeah, so the stricter gun control, obviously larger bump to that side than anything we've seen than the last mass shooting, excuse me, drive through.
Happens.
Sorry. And so there was a question on the panel of why do you think that is? Why is this time different than the last? And like I said, I think it's been one of the key things is that these people are the victims of Parkland are old enough to have an intelligent conversation about guns, but still young enough that they're not they aren't easy targets to be ridiculed publicly. I mean, still there are people doing that who are terrible, but I think it's they're in this place, I mean obviously Parkland is a terrible thing. So don't take this that I wanted a shooting to happen. I'm saying that Parkland comes with a great circumstance of events in which we can actually get victims of gun violence to talk about their experience with gun violence. Because,
You couldn't interview the victims of the Sandy Hook shooting because they're little kids.
Right.
And this is And this falls right into our old wheelhouse as well, because we used to be very politically engaged as high school students. We were both members of the Junior State of America, which was a student politics and debate club, essentially.
Is to make a long story short. And a debate club? Shout out to Junior State.
But I think if anything is going to be the turning point in the gun debate, it's going to be with kind of the young people that have been more thrust into a position of having to have firm, or at least firmer, political ideologies than the people who we went to high school with than when we were in high school, because it was more of a hobby, and this is more their life.
I mean, it's kind of like that 9/11 generation kind of thing. You know, we grew up in a time where, you know, you had to grow up after 9/11. You had to at least be aware of what was happening. And that was weird for our generation because I was seven when 9/11 happened. But that event informed my political discourse to this day.
Yeah.
So much like that, I would feel if I was a victim of a mass shooting, that event would totally change my opinions or direct my opinions on gun control to, you know, to my last breath. Like, you have anything more to say on that?
I think we killed it. Oh God, that, let's cut that. I think we tapped this. I think we tapped this topic.
Cut it out in post. Cut it out in post.
Yeah.
And the last thing I had was this CBS poll, which is it's a little strange. They polled people on the idea, the new idea, on teachers carrying guns. They asked for oppose and favor. 50% oppose, 44% favor.
Damn.
That's a lot closer than you'd think it would be.
Yeah.
And when I heard those stats, I was immediately, well, are people just favoring this issue because it's something that the president said?
Mm-hmm.
Because at least it's a novel idea. At least it's something. Yeah. But, you know, because and they pointed out that when these shootings happened and Obama was in office, yes, thoughts and prayers, but we didn't really have, and they pointed out rightly, so we didn't really have, like, much of this debate. It was more of public opinion scurries around for a bit. Mm-hmm. There's some talk on the politics side. We get some good, like, presser, like, one piece, like, junket, like, you know, coming from the mouths of politicians. And then maybe, like, something happens where we increase a tax on something or we take something away. We've never really stretched and, like, actually, since 2008, we've never had a big opinion on the gun issue. So I think, you know, at least there's something new, but it's not a good idea, in my opinion, to have teachers, because once teachers carry guns, it's not a school, it's a jail.
Exactly.
Yeah. How am I going to learn if I'm afraid? So,
like, how am I going to come into class looking forward to Shelby Story or in every other Wednesday and see the teacher up there packing heat?
Right.
Like, it's
right. You know, and they say, like, you know, how many African American kids are accidentally going to get shot, and, like, yeah, how many how many people are going to accidentally shoot themselves? Like, if you are trained and you're allowed to do that, I'm fine with it, but
there are people who are trained, who are police officers, who are soldiers, who are what have you, and they still freeze.
Right.
What makes you think a teacher who spent most of their time around a student who may be troubled or may just be an asshole coming to a school with a gun. Like, how is that teacher going to look at this child?
And I have to clarify that. And, I meant fine with it as in an individual person. I don't think they should have them in the school.
Yeah, no, no, no. No.
Because that would be terrible.
Yeah.
But yeah, I know where he's kind of grasping at straws here, kind of trying to figure out what to do to not make the NRA mad, but also do something for the majority of the people that still are clamoring for something. You know, the majority of Trump supporters still want something to be done.
Yeah, and this is the last note I want to make on this topic, and it will kind of slide us into the next topic as well, but regardless of where you fall on the political alignment chart, just clamoring for action is the most dangerous thing you can possibly do, especially when emotions are high, especially when it's an emotional issue like what happened at Parkland, because just wanting to do something is no way to govern a nation.
Right. And so, that probably took a long time, didn't it?
Yeah, we've been recording for like an hour and a half.
It's a good, podcast banter to just talk about your podcast while you're recording. Oh, absolutely. We should work on our segues. Which one is right here? What is the next topic that we had cooking?
So I was very briefly going to discuss a little bit about what's going on with Cambridge Analytica, which is this company that basically used material that was sourced through a Facebook app. I don't know. I'm pretty sure most people listening to this, and you and I included, I'm sure, have done one of those Facebook quizzes where you click the button that signs over your permissions on your information collected on your Facebook account and the information's connected through your friends to this site that will tell you what your ideal job will be or what dog you look most like or some other nonsense like that. That is essentially the nuts and bolts of where this information came from to go to this organization called Cambridge Analytica, which is a data aggregation service. So last month, both Facebook and the CEO of Cambridge Analytica, a guy named Alexander Nix, told a parliamentary inquiry on fake news in the United Kingdom that the company did not have or use private Facebook data. Quote, "They may have lots of data, but will not be Facebook user data. It may be data about people who are on Facebook that they have gathered themselves, but it is not the data that we have provided," which we now know to be patently false.
Right.
They were straight up jacking people's user data from Facebook and selling it to this company, which was used to influence public opinion on not only the 2016 presidential election, but also to influence the populist movement behind Brexit in the UK.
Okay.
And I just want to touch on, if any of the things that I just said weren't astounding enough, I want to point out the most astounding thing to me, which was that there was an actual event that happened in actual British Parliament that was called a parliamentary inquiry on fake news. This is where we are in 2018.
Okay. Wow. Yeah, the president probably really, really patting himself on the back for fake news.
Oh, absolutely.
I invented fake news.
He invented fake news. This is kind of true.
But yeah, it's, and then I saw today that the UK Cambridge Analytica offices are being raided this morning.
Yep.
And yeah, when you first brought it up, I had no idea what this story really was. It was just starting, I think, because that was Wednesday, right? Wednesday was kind of like the big day. It was when the press got out there, I guess.
And yeah. But the thing is, I'll have a link to her Twitter
right.
in the show notes. But this journalist from the UK, Carol Cadwallader, she's been covering this story since December of 2016. And she's been the only one following it.
Okay.
Until now.
Wow. Yeah. So, I mean, how do we... how do we talk about what kinds of privacies are allowable for our social media to mm-hmm. gain access to in order for mm-hmm. us to have, you know, face-to-face or seamless conversations with the world around us while also mm-hmm. not having them, you know, abuse that relationship and yeah.
Yeah.
They're these are for-profit companies that mm-hmm. want to make money any way possible. And, you know, mm-hmm. just look at Google. Like,
yeah.
You sell data analytics to other companies, no matter mm-hmm. how small the data is. Oh, this person searched for pizza that one day. Well, we'll sell this data to this pizza company, and the amount of times that they search for this type of pizza, you know, or, you know, hey, there's a Donato's near him. Let's ping the Donato's right on his home screen, or mm-hmm. you know, send him an email about Donato's. Yeah. Like, that is crazy to me.
Yep.
That is
absolutely
super, like, you know how I have this story. Okay, I did so. I was in the restroom. I swear it's not going to go anywhere weird.
This is going a weird direction.
I was at work, and I was in the restroom, and I was looking in the mirror. I was fixing my hair, and I realized that from the top of my head, there's starting to get a little bald spot here, like on the side. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh, man, I got to do something about that. And so, I just, like, fixed it up, and I went back to work. I came back home. And, you know, I was just, like, going through social media, going through Amazon. And social media, Facebook, shows me mm-hmm. a hair care cream. I'm not saying that they're listening through my phone, but...
It's... super weird how interconnected.
See, like, I was thinking about writing a tweet about how it's funny mm-hmm. being almost 24 and having to deal with balding, but
yeah.
I didn't actually write that tweet. I didn't tell anybody about mm-hmm. balding. So how did that come back to me?
It's the circle, dude. It's the circle.
It's definitely the circle.
100%.
All right.
Oh, God.
What else do you have to say about that, Dylan? Is there anything else you want to... Any good points on that you want to...
So, I, after I kind of got into the weeds of Cambridge Analytica, and I don't want to take too much time on this because we've already been recording for quite some right. time, but I think Facebook's responsibility here, because it's a for-profit company, as we've discussed, right. like the... They're allowed to do with your information what you elect to
allow
them
to. Yeah, what you signed off for. Yeah.
So what I did yesterday was, and I did a little bit of time tracking, I spent 47 minutes going through every app that I've ever used on Facebook that still was connected to all my information and all my friends' information and removing access. It took me 47 minutes.
Wow.
For 7 years of apps right. that I'd accumulated. And just the random bullshit that you wouldn't...
Right.
That you forget about or you don't think about when you sign up for. And it's, like, immensely terrifying. Like, how loose I was, especially when I was a younger kid, with the information that I had about not just myself, but the people who I'm in contact with on social right. media. And just, like, it's not surprising at all to me how easy it is for these social media influencers, and I'm not using that in the tense of the guy who's like, I got a Porsche in my garage. Knowledge. Like
Tasha Lopez, yeah.
But Ty Lopez, the social media, Ty Lopez. Yeah, the social media influencers in the sense of the big money, the big money people who will push advertisements and will push content in your direction because of the information they've gathered about you.
Right.
Part of that, I think, makes my user experience better. I'm not going to lie. Part of that is immensely terrifying and is definitely making me reconsider how much of a techno-optimist I've been in the last 5 years.
Right. Yeah, it's really, you know, this... Having Google search analytics just, like, on my phone, like, oh, it knows exactly what I want to do.
Mm-hmm.
That, a little scary, but also... Mm-hmm. It helped me do the thing I wanted to do.
Yeah.
And I, you know, like, and there are some times where I'm like, you know, this is not information that, this is probably something I should, you know, click off of, quit, something like that. But there's just so much, like, convenience. And that's mm-hmm. what they're banking on, is that
yeah.
it's so convenient to have it and not go in, like you said, 47 minutes of deleting your approvals.
Mm-hmm.
It's so convenient to just let that go.
Yeah.
And that's free information, free money for them. And they're just making more money every time you send a post or interact with their product. So.
Yeah. Holy shit, we got heavy. Oh my God.
Should we wrap up?
Do y'all want to do a Yahoo?
Final Yahoo? I don't even have one set up. I was thinking that we should do like some parody things of other podcasts, because I do want this podcast to be kind of a morph of like everything that we want to do in the mm-hmm. format of podcasting. So just bring up any idea and we can do it. We talked about doing a movie review because we both like The Flophouse. Flophouse is also on Maximum Fun.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they're three comedian friends that review bad movies. And we're not saying it's a bad movie because we've never seen it. We're just saying it looks batshit insane. But we wanted to review The Fifth Element. So mm-hmm. we might do that sometime. And that would be really awesome. Sure we could, you know, if we get together sometime, because I'm remembering last time I saw you, we went to Cane's, Raising Cane's. We'll get together. Oh, yeah. We should review a fast food restaurant like the Doughboys.
I'm just having like the nightmarish flashback because I was fucking hammered right. when we went to Cane's.
That's the best way to enjoy Cane's, though.
Oh, God. Right. Yeah,
so good. Sober Dylan is reminiscing.
I'm trying to get rid of the memory.
Thanks for the memories.
Oh God.
But yeah, rip. So we'll have that. We'll have video game discussions. Obviously, in the last mm-hmm. podcast project we did was a video game podcast with our Matthew Michael friend, Matt Levine. Where is he nowadays? We haven't. I haven't reached out to him in a bit.
I think he's still in Irvine.
Okay.
Irvine?
Yeah. We should probably... Yeah. Maybe... We could maybe bleep out that last name.
Oh, shit. Yeah. Fuck.
Whatever. I don't know if he gives a shit. So, what I'm trying to say is that we're just trying to have fun with the medium and see where it goes. Holy shit. We have gone pretty long. So, should I take us out?
Yeah.
All right. For Dylan Bickers, this is Devin Navaratnam. This was any other Wednesday? Every other Wednesday. God damn it.
Do you want to do that again?
Yeah, I want to do that
take
again.
Two.
Take two. For Dylan Bickers, this is Devin Navaratnam. This is every other Wednesday. Our music is from Villainous Beats. He's also in the show notes from his new EP, Lo-Fi Depression. So go check that out. And go check us out on social media and both of our sites, right? You're still at the masthead?
Oh, yeah.
And
I'm still at the masthead.
I'm at devinava.com. And so for both of us, signing off. See ya.
Oh, yeah. Kiss your dad square on the lips.